Guess what? It's 7:04 a.m. on Monday, July 2nd, and you're listening to a Ken Braverman podcast. How's everyone doing today? Boy, it's been busy. I wanted to pod all weekend, but I was just running around like crazy and wasn't able to do it. Nothing but news, nothing but action, nothing but summertime. Moon looked great last night. I've been up a lot. I like being awake this time of year. I've said it before, I'll say it again. So, all right. I had one of those incidents this weekend where it made me wish that we were living in the future. Because, you know, there's a guy's life that probably would have been saved. I was driving down to North Carolina on the Blue Ridge Parkway, which is a gorgeous road, fantastic road through the mountains of Western Virginia, not West Virginia, but Western Virginia and North Carolina. And down by Roanoke, some guy looks like he overcompensated when he started going off the road and came back, hit a tree, and he did not make it. We couldn't get him out of the car. We beat the cops there by a long time. Anyway, it's sad. It's obviously sad to see the loss of life and to see this kid look like he was in his 20s too. But it's also sad because with autopilot type technology and driverless car functions and software and things that really take over the car, they're not going to allow you to make the type of decisions that might be unsafe, or at least too unsafe. And also, I think they would prevent you from overcorrecting, which is really what the accident that the remnant of the accident that I saw up close, it really looked like it was an overcompensation, going over the cliff one way and thinking he's going to go over, and then just overcompensating the other way and going across the road completely into a tree. Anyway, sad times. But it makes me yearn for implementing the type of monitoring and control, self-defense of your car. Basically, imagining equipping your car with a self-defense mechanism so it tries not to get into accidents, on top of letting you drive over it, you know? It's kind of like a back end to what you are doing as a driver, and doesn't let you do some things that are too unsafe. I would be fine with that. There's a part of this podcast I was thinking about what to talk about and how to order it. And there was a part of me that wanted to go down the surveillance state route here and really talk about how we are going to be giving up a lot of our privacy and a lot of our freedom. However, in exchange for that, we are going to receive a degree of safety that we weren't able to receive in the past. And I think that I don't know how we're all going to react to it, and I don't think it's going to be welcoming that we're just all going to all of a sudden say, yeah, it's fine that everything we do all the time is recorded in some fashion through an Internet of Things type device, you know, whether it be something in your car, or whether it be your phone, or whether it be your Amazon Echo in your house, whatever it's doing, we just accept that it is what it is, and what happens in the world, whatever we do, however our actions get back to us, whether we would be, you know, embarrassed if people knew some things we did we wanted to keep in private, we're just going to kind of have to deal with this. Because I think that the exchange and the safety we get, and also the convenience, it's too great. And we're going to want to make that trade. We're going to want to give up that privacy. So I went down that route slightly, simply because thinking about driverless cars, if you are too intoxicated to drive and you get in your car and your car knows it, it'll still drive you home, but it won't let you drive. Think about that. Think about really relinquishing our control, our dominance over our machines, relinquishing that and saying that, no, the robot knows better. And we have to allow it to take its course. And then, of course, what happens if it's wrong? We want to fight it. I know it gets messy. But I do think that's the route we are going down. Roots. Have I been on like Route 66, Route 28? Is that why I'm saying the word route all the time? Whatever you see, it just permeates your brain. But I don't want to go down the surveillance state route. It's too boring too. But just accept that we're not going to have any privacy. But that's fine. That's fine. No privacy is fine. Then all the criminals get locked up, the people that are doing these terrible misdeeds. The most egregious crimes are all being exposed, right? We're digging up like the Golden State Killer because we can do cross-referencing DNA testing and stuff like that. Why not have a huge freaking database of everybody? I'm fine with it. I think John Oliver just did a an episode this Sunday on gene editing. I can't wait to watch it. I'm sure it's fantastic. I would like to go over that because on top of driverless cars, which is it's going to be a huge change. It's going to save so many lives, change the way we do. It's going to change industry. It's going to change car insurance industry. It's going to change the automobile industry. All of a sudden, if the cars are driverless, do you really need one parked in your garage all the time? Or can they just all kind of, you know, be circling around, you know, like drone cars going around everywhere, just picking you up? We can create this amazing world. We really can. The robots will help us. I want to get us there. Also, when I was thinking about what to discuss and what to talk about, birds are out today. Think about what to talk about. I went through the normal political stories and things like, oh, do I want to talk about Congress grilling the FBI and really it getting super uncomfortable in front of Congress because there are clearly some criminals on the congressional side of the aisle protecting the president and committing crimes themselves. And they are getting angry at the FBI to supposedly get, yeah, I didn't want to talk about it. I didn't want to talk about it because I started thinking about all these issues that come up that we continue to fight about. The Supreme Court justice, right? Kennedy is going to be stepping down or resigning or, yeah, not resigning or retiring. And, you know, Trump's probably going to be able to name someone. Again, this whole discussion about somebody who's definitely pro-life up there. Why is that a decision? Why can't we argue these things on the merits of cases? Why do people have to have preconceived notions about it? How do you know how they're going to vote for? I thought there was a separation between church and state. Like, anyway, it's annoying. It's a frustrating story because I used to have more respect for the court, but now I see how the court is just made up of people and those subjective opinions can be manipulated and can be perverted. You know, like you can really put people on the court that are going to say things like corporations are people and screw up all the funding in our system because I don't know how that happened, but it did. And it makes me want to have robot judges. You know, why can't we agree on this objectivity, something that's traceable? I don't like the fact that you got Clarence Thomas sitting on the bench. He never says anything. Never says anything, never asks any questions. I don't think he thinks very critically about things. He just seems like a stooge. And these people have lifetime appointments. We have so many old rules. All of our legislation, it's super old rules. The 1700s. People should not have lifetime appointments. The Congress should not be able to hold up a nomination. They should put Merrick Garland up there. They should totally do that. Instead of the Democrats arguing that they should continue to propagate the horrible rule at the end of the Obama administration when Mitch McConnell wouldn't allow Merrick Garland to at least get a hearing to be voted on, that we should not nominate a Supreme Court justice now before a midterm election. Like, that is a horrible argument. Is the Democrats, why on earth would you push that argument? The argument, the position is very simple. Barack Obama was the president. He had a year left in his presidency. He nominated Merrick Garland. Mitch McConnell pulled some BS that should be illegal and would not allow a vote. And so Barack Obama was essentially stolen his nomination. He stolen the Supreme Court justice away from him. They should nominate Merrick Garland now and have a vote on him. That is how you apologize for that. You don't go and say, oh, we're going to keep doing this like we did before and not have a vote until after an election. But it's a midterm, not even a presidential election. It's such a terrible argument. No, you put Merrick Garland up. You say, we're not voting on anybody until we put Merrick Garland up. And I think you should totally do that. So that's the argument to have when it comes to the Supreme Court justice. There is no other discussion. Like, we're not going to allow the Republicans to keep our government hostage the way they have. We could just unite against them. We will just say, no, we're not doing anything. I like the employees of, employees dealing with there was all these marches and stuff about the child separation issue and how we want to treat people. And the whistleblowers that are talking about what they're seeing in these places where the kids are being held. I like it. Just get out there. Just get out there. Be honest. Push it. Push the truth. Don't stop. Everyone will support you because you know what you're doing is right. I think we can all stand up. We're getting somewhere. We are getting somewhere. You know, there's this huge counter-espionage investigation going on. People are going down, but they're fighting hard. They're fighting extremely hard. But I feel goodness, but I've done so much traveling around, and I do see good people everywhere. Almost everybody you see is a good person, at least in the 5 minutes that I talked to them. And I do have faith that we're going to solve these problems because the future is so bright. Look at what Elon Musk is doing, right? Everything he does is great. And I was doing some driving through North Carolina, and I saw these gorgeous scenery out in the mountains, and there was like a huge power line going right through it where I should have had an awesome view of this mountain landscape. And I was like, man, these power lines should be gone. Everyone should have a Tesla Powerwall in their home and solar panels and places where we unite and we store these things in large housed giga battery type places and then siphon it out to people as they need it in smaller grids. Like, you could totally do it this way. You could have little farms of it so that we don't have to rely on decentralized grid. We're all going to be so much safer. I think, unfortunately, if the Russians do actually attack our grid, which apparently they have the capability to do, and close things down, while that would be a terrible thing that could cause massive economic and potentially social and health issues for many people, even though it'd be devastating, that was, if it would push us more to a decentralized grid, I would say that at least we then moved in that direction. Because think about how our lives could be different. And maybe you don't see this as significant, but I totally do. Instead of going to the gas station and muddying up our atmosphere, we could be taking all our energy from the sun, storing it, reusing it, storing it in batteries, using it, not burning anything, not having to mine anything, not destroying our environment at all, and using these robotic machines that are going to have lives decades longer than our automobiles have had in the past. And none of these crazy oil moving parts that need to be replaced and wear down and are dirty. None of that nonsense. It's all been revamped for the 21st century. That's just cars. How about health? I mean, how about like immunotherapy techniques? How about tailored genome editing? How about, you know, what specific type of cancer you have? We're going to run we're going to take your DNA, or we're going to take some samples from your body. We're going to run them through a machine. The machine is going to kick out a mathematically based cure where we're going to culture something and make it work directly with your genome, you know, work directly with your body. So there won't be rejection because it's built for you. We're going to be able to do that. We're already sort of doing that, but it's not fully streamlined yet. Imagine when we're attacking all of our health concerns like that, when we're monitoring our health on a daily, not even probably more, it's probably going to be on a very periodic basis, extremely periodic as in consistently periodic. Like, you're probably going to check in on your blood and your pulse and stuff every so often, every hour, every two, whatever, you're by a machine or by your phone or by whatever. And it's going to lead to these amazing advancements like predicting heart attacks, predicting strokes, knowing you're too tired to drive. Like, there's all kinds of benefits you're not even going to realize. And yes, faced with terminal illnesses today that we thought were completely incurable, that we're going to limit our lifespans to years and even months, that those things could be completely curable due to how we are attacking our genetic diseases and the way we're treating things in a totally different way. The way that you would treat yourself if you could put the human body together like a bunch of Legos, if you could build a Lego human being and you had a trillion little Legos that were just microns in diameter and you knew exactly how they all fit together. And when one little piece came out, when there was one little Jenga poke on a part of the Lego, you knew what to do to go back there and make that area exactly the way you want it again. We never were able to treat diseases like this in the past because we had to treat our bodies on a macro level because we not only do we not understand it, we still don't fully understand everything that our bodies are doing, both kind of autonomously, like without us even knowing our bodies are doing things like breathing and stuff that we don't consciously. Our immune systems are functioning and our cells are dividing all without us really concentrating on it. And so we don't fully understand how all that works. But we are being able to train machines to gather all that information and start to make some sense of it. And we've already had success. And so how is this not just going to extrapolate exponentially? How are we, as soon as you come up with the, think of it as like a decryptor for disease, right? Like you throw a viral genome into this, we call it a software program, right? You say you have a viral genome, and a viral genome is just the base pairs of DNA, adenine, cytosine, guanine, thymine, all in their order, and they're double helix, all rolled up into a little ball as it goes and infects your cells, right? Little viruses go in and inject themselves and then replicate, and they hijack cells and make them blow up and shoot all these viruses out into other cells, into neighboring cells and everything else. Now, your viral DNA, you can get a sequence on it. I mean, some of them are only hundreds or thousands of base pairs long. Some of them are millions or probably tens of millions long. But what you can do with this is as we advance, the advancements in this technology and the ability for us to read and process this massive genetic information all the time and see how not only is it structured and where are the weak parts of its DNA, but also what type of proteins does it create? What type of enzymes does it create or interact with? So that you can tailor an antidote to a viral poison on the molecular level. Meaning, you know that there's this crazy weird ball of a virus and it has one weak spot right at, 30 degrees from the right and in this position, this part of the virus can be, can be poked and stabbed and die. Then maybe you create an enzyme that has a pointy edge right at that area and bonds to that virus and then just injects itself and kills it. There's all types of crazy, crazy models that we can't even understand on this tiny little level that we're going to be able to use to extend our health indefinitely. That's the direction we're going. I see it. I can provide you with some examples of real world people that are still alive, like Jimmy Carter is still alive because of advanced techniques like this and battling his glioma and his brain tumor. Anyway, I see a bright future. I'm having an awesome time right now. I'm on a roll. I have been rolling lately. I'm everywhere. And I'm continuing to be everywhere, doing even more traveling, having a blast, just living life and I'm going to run for president. There's no doubt. Cause like, I'd love to just solve all the world's problems. Like what, give me a problem and I'll come up with a new solution. Because there's always a better solution. Any of these problems that have persisted over hundreds of years or decades, where there's these two sides that can never seem to agree and are always fighting each other, there's always a third solution. It kind of has to be a third solution that nobody's ever thought of that comes in to solve the problem, because you can't ever get the rocks on either side of the issue to ever move, right? And so I'm ready. I'm ready to solve more problems. Energy, driverless cars. I won't solve abortion yet. I actually had an idea. I'm not going there on this pod. Maybe another time. But happy Monday. We've got an interesting holiday week. Big news is going to drop eventually here, right? It's already summer. I don't know. Keep watching the news. I've been away from it, but I'm sure something big is going to drop soon. So I can't burn myself out.